Hello everyone, I'm George from Ireland. So here is the book, Jeremy Catto, A Portrait of a Quintessential Oxford Don. I didn't recall speaking to him twice. Catto, I once mispronounced it Cato in my first soiree with him, who was a fixture at Oriel College for over four decades. So he was a fellow there, a tutor in history. Not sure he rose to any other titles, really, not professor or anything. Had all sorts of roles. So, Portrait of a Quintessential Oxford Don by David Vianney, one of his pupils. So, I also knew David, a most agreeable chap, rather over exuberant in some important policy meetings of Oxford University Conservative Association. But apart from that, nobody could say a bad word about him. And there's scarcely a bad word to say about Jeremy Catto in here. So, it's engrossing, it's very detailed, it's thoroughly researched. It's got quotations from plenty of sources, but it doesn't overdo them. They're not overly long. They're sometimes woven into the narrative. It's got a foreword by Sir Alan Duncan. And I recall when Dr. Catto retired from Oriel, Sir Alan, who was then playing Mr. Duncan, MP, wrote this piece, and I spotted it at the time. Now, Sir Alan Duncan actually went to St. John's College, Oxford, reading history, I think, but presumably tutored by Dr. Catto, who was at Oriel. And Catto himself had attended Balliol end of 1950s, early to the 1960s. So it unearthed things that Catto would rather that we didn't know. For instance, he got into trouble in his as a finalist when he was found to have purloined books from Blackwell's worth £30. And like in 1960 values, that'd be like thousands of pounds. And so he was rusticated, but he'd rather cover that one up. Completely uncharacteristic moment of madness. I think he didn't do it once because he was selling them on to raise funds for himself. So there's some reminiscences from David Vianney, his meeting him. It gives enough context because obviously there might be some general readers, people who want to know about Oxford, Dons and so forth, and not just those who knew him, but is a labour of love, as Vianney says himself. It also sheds lights on aspects of Dr. Catto's life he preferred to keep private. For instance, that he had a long-term boyfriend. Now, I mean, I could tell he was gay from a mile off when I saw him. Everybody knew that. And people jokingly said that his favourite undergraduates were Catto mites. Having said that, there was never a whisper that he ever did anything that he shouldn't have done towards any of the men and women he taught. Absolutely not. Yeah, he was that sort of high camp, venerably fat Oxford intellectual homosexual of a type that doesn't really exist, comfy and tweedy and all the rest of it. A slight mummy's boy about him, a bit of a sort of posh version of Alan Bennett. I mean, Alan Bennett, also an Oxonian, and also from Northern England, but Catto spoke, received pronunciation, perhaps unusual for a Geordie. So he gives us some family background, goes back a few generations, reveals that one of his uncle, someone was ennobled, so he was a relative to a peer of the realm. So not that much about his Newcastle childhood and going to the Royal Grammar School, Newcastle, the most estimable school in Newcastle upon Tyne and so on. The family had come from North Britain a few generations earlier. I had no idea of that. And actually, Jeremy was not Jeremy Catto's Christian name. It's one of his middle names. Inch was another, things like that. He showed scholarly promise from the first. So known for his precocity and not for his sporting prowess and all the rest of it. Crossed the Tiber, age 17. That I hadn't known. And it fills us in a bit about what was it like to be a teenager in the 1950s Northeast England, about the background to the school he attended, RGS. Quite a few schools have got quite a few cities in the United Kingdom have got a Royal Grammar School, and so forth. So what he was up to as an undergraduate at Balliol and so on. So it's got pace, it's engrossing in places, obviously got a few criticisms, is occasionally a bit repetitive. It says how he compartmentalized his life, and it repeated the word compartmentalized a few times, as in, so he was really committed to his college, and even in the noughties, he was still living in, which is almost unheard of, apart from for the head of house. If you didn't go to varsity, you wouldn't know this, that the Oxford colleges, they've all got a head of house, but there's a different title according to the college. It's warden of Merton, is provost of Oriel, got that right, master of Univ, rector of Lincoln, dean of Christchurch, president of Trinity, principle of Lady Margaret Hall, and so forth. But apart from the head of house, people didn't live in, but he still lived in, and that was an anachronism, and not a bad one. So he threw himself into college life, having 3 meals a day in the hall, being a regular attender of chapel. He attended chapel almost religiously. I say almost because, of course, he was a Roman Catholic. It was an Anglican chapel, but he was not sectarian in that regard, and so forth. About his a little bit about his time at Durham University, his relationship with his two younger sisters, and so on. His romance with an American when he was 22, and that man he stayed with all his life. But when he wanted to get away from it, he go to is it Aden, a small place in Northamptonshire where he had his house, and he never introduced the love of his life, John Wolfe, to Oriel. So it seems his flirtation with leftist politics in his youth. And he quickly changed his mind about that one. And then him being a sort of small C and capital C conservative, but not that partisan about it. And then about some of the thankless tasks he engaged to actually rescue the financial situation of Oriel in the late 70s and early 80s, his opposition to the college going mixed. And this is something I have some sympathy for. I definitely want to be in a mixed college, but I recognize there's some people who don't. And they want an all boys and all girls college. And all right, we should provide that diversity for those who want an all female and an all male environment, who don't want to be heterosocial. Well, I want to be very heterosocial, and so on. And then it provides some context. Why was he so deep in the closet? You've got to remember the situation he grew up in. You know, he was 28 when homosexuality was decriminalized, and of course, it was regarded as scandalous. Well, after that, I mean, Oxford being very much the liberal end of opinion in the United Kingdom, but even then, well into the 80s, there would have been some frank homophobia. And the other thing is, he was just, in some ways, a private person, a certain reserve, and that there's nothing wrong with that. We don't have to let it all hang out. We don't have to overshare, and so on. So it gives the ambiance of what it was like to be about him, and his eccentricities would no longer be tolerated, like falling asleep in tutorials. Or was he just pretending to? Was that a way of testing people, unnerving them and serving them gin and whatever all through tutorials? Sherry, I'm sure it wouldn't be allowed today, even though there's only one glass and just a small amount. And how that nonplussed Americans when he there was sort of American students on these summer school things, his forays around Europe, his gallant rescue of a dissident from Czechoslovakia in the communist era, so forth. And the way that he was considered to be head of house in the 80s, it didn't happen. And there are people who went into bat for him, his relationship with Hugh Trevor Roper, the renowned historian who was later raised to the peerage as Lord Dacre. His didactic method and so on, and it's got all sorts of tributes from all sorts of people. So that's it. I don't think it actually says where he was laid to rest. So yeah, it's a very lengthy and reputable biography. It also examines some of the criticisms of him, people saying he was misogynistic or was he snobby and so on. So that I also appreciated that it wasn't too one-sided, even though to some degree this is a hagiography. David Vianney, he makes no bones about it. He's an outspoken admirer of Dr. Cato, but he's willing to give space to those who have a less laudatory view of him. Examines his contributions to scholarship, something which now would meet with bafflement, the fact that he never published a book, just very well-received essays, recognizing he was a superb essayist, but there was no things to publish for the sake of, no need to publish for the sake of it. Didn't have this Stakhanovite attitude to publication that have to produce reams and reams of bumf, even if he thinks it's third rate, simply regurgitating or reformulating other people's work. There has to be some sort of novelty. What's the discovery? If it's a well worked over field, there's no need to repeat what others have said. So it wasn't reinventing the wheel. And some photos have been a very, very different era when he was slim and so on. And there he is, like quite the dandy. Okay. And that he did have close female friends. They weren't girlfriends in any sense, and so on. So I remember being in with Marcus Walker in his rooms in Oriel, and he suggested he introduce me to Dr. Cato, and he phoned him up one evening, and I heard Cato's voice, "Yes, my dear," and nobody would say that these days. Not that there was anything inapposite about him calling him my dear, and though he was dean, I still forgot that title. But he was no disciplinarian, and he seems to be an angel of mercy. No record of him being firm with people or ever having people sent down or a thing even rusticated. He did tell me what I think they had to rusticate Oppenheimer. I think I heard that one from the horse's mouth. Goodness. Because sometimes mercy is not the right thing. Sometimes people need to be severely punished. And what's the other? Oh, I learned the word precarity from this. And then he was involved in the Canning Club, which is sort of a conservative essay and discussion club. And I went in 2005. It was just after Robert Jackson, Conservative MP for Wantage, had defected to Labour, like about a month before he's due to stand down because an election was coming up. And I was going back to where I lived at the time. And he said, "Well, be careful on the slippery roads." Actually, I was going by train. One of my few conversations with him. Anyway, sorely missed. Lovely chap, made a tremendous contribution. His self-effacement was obviously very decorous. And that was it. So fondly remembered, had an enormously positive attitude to many people. Just flicking through it now, it jogs my memory and so forth. And so it's a very telling that his pupils chose to stay in touch with him, his former pupils, for decades afterwards, inviting him to stay in embassies when they were ambassadors and high commissioners and so forth. And some that went into banking, and of course he thought this is good because they could show great liberality towards the college, which at times was almost stony broke. And then his collegiality, fighting his corner for what he thought was the right curriculum. But when he lost the battle, accepting that with good grace and doing his uttermost to make sure that policies succeed, even when he disagreed with them. So he's very honourable in that regard. So that is Dr. Kato. They don't make him like that anymore. I'm afraid they both broke the mould when he was made. I'm wondering if it's still going, actually, if the Canning Club is still going, as in named in after the Honourable George Canning, that Prime Minister who died in office. After about 3 months, also an Irishman. And then he died in 2018 that summer, had a memorial service, but I think was out of the country at that time. And then I'm not sure where he's laid to rest. I would love to find out, pay tribute to him. Obviously, it was in St. Mary the Virgin University Church across the road from Oriel where this took place. Died, I suppose one of the sad things for him was to hear at the time the Rose Must Fall movement trying to trash Oriel's proud heritage, and obviously he didn't know in those days. Fortunately, Rhodes has stood tall. Well, thanks for watching watching my video, and I mean, how much was it? 18 quid or something like that. So yeah, I mean, I couldn't have titled it better myself. So he's just in a way what Adonis is supposed to be, and I don't think he was living up to an image. He was completely authentic. Nobody would dispute that. So plenty of praise for David Vianney and only the mildest constructive criticisms. Thank you for watching and goodbye.